Good Wednesday morning, everyone. It is August 4th. Yes, it is Wednesday. I can't believe this this month is already chugging along. Coming up on today's show, the eviction ban is back on. So who caved in this whole process, and who do we have to thank for all of that? We'll get to that. And the stimulus plan is in real trouble. There's a couple of interesting provisions in this that we're learning more about. It's not making progressives happy. It's not making me happy. There's some hidden taxes in here that the president said wasn't going to be in there. Why are they in there? So we'll get to all of that on your stimulus this morning. And President Biden calls on Governor Cuomo of New York to resign. Get out of there. Get the heck out of there. But it doesn't look like he's going anywhere. He's defiant. Ready to get uncomfortable? Morning Invest starts right now. Oh boy, welcome into the show. We got a busy, busy show for you today. Grover is here somewhere barking at somebody. David is in the control booth, my producer running the show. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Very good. It'll be a good day today.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy day. It was one of those where I literally was like up to the last minute writing the show. I sat down with you and I'm like, I don't even have my videos ready to go. Like I'm totally behind here. So,
well, I had to text you because I was like, are you coming?
Mm-hmm. And I'm like feverishly typing and trying to get everything done. You know, there's just so many angles to a bunch of these stories today that I want to make sure that we're covering. So thanks to all of you for supporting our show, for tuning in and supporting independent journalism here. Covering the stories that you probably won't see in the mainstream media because they are bought and sold by big business. We're going to see some big examples today of Wall Street, multiple stories today where Wall Street basically, they get what they want. They just get what they want. Just throwing money at problems, they get what they want. And politicians just concede all the time. So we'll get there. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor today, our friends over at Public. I love these guys. It's one of my favorite ways to trade stocks. And by the way, what's great about Public is you get a slice of free stocks when you sign up for free. It's very, very simple to just go to Morning Invest. Use the code Morning when you download the app. So go to public.com, download the app Morning, and use the code Morning. That way you'll get those free slice of stocks. You'll get up to $50 in free stocks to start growing your portfolio. But what I love about them is that they are a social media style platform. So it's really cool. Like the other day, I traded a few stocks on there, and you can follow me on Public. And I let people know that, hey, I was selling this particular stock. I was invested in an energy company, and I just sold, made some really good profits. And so other people said, hey, thanks for sharing that. They sold and they also made some great profits because they bought when I bought. So it's really, really cool. And I can type out blog posts in there and give you my thoughts on what I'm trading and what I'm investing in. It really is great. I love the clean interface. They really stay away from like risky stuff too. They don't like, you know, they're not all into the meme stocks. They really focus on making you, you know, really, really smart investor. They really want you to understand, you know, why they don't participate also in payment for order flow, like some of these other, you know, companies do. They don't do that. So that's great. You know, if you've switched from a different platform, I've switched from other platforms and I love how Public works. I really just love the clean interface. And I feel more confident in investing by using public.com. So again, you can invest with any amount of money. You can invest in a $1,000 stock with just $1. That's great too. So you can buy fractional shares and get slices of stock. But get your $50 for free in free stock today. Get started growing your portfolio by going to using the code MORNING. When you download the app, let public.com know you're coming from Morning Invest. You'll get up to $50 in free stock to get started in growing your portfolio. It's valid for U.S. residents 18 years and older. Subject to account approval, see public.com/disclosures, not investment advice. Not investment advice. All right. Good to see everybody this morning. Chime in the chat. I want to hear where you guys are from. Let me know where you guys are joining us from. How's pizza doing this morning?
She's doing good. She just, I have this system where I take these Kongs. Oops. Like the Brady Bunch somehow. You were on bottom. I take these Kongs. They're like little toys that people put peanut butter in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I put some kibble in the bottom, and then I put her soft food on top, and then I freeze it. And so then I give it to her. It takes her about half an hour to eat it. So it's like her meal, but it takes her a while to eat it. Jennifer, that's actually her method that she taught me and how she feeds Dizzy. And it works so good because it keeps her occupied the whole time I get the show set up. And then now when she's done, she's over here sleeping because she just worked over half an hour eating her food.
She's like, I'm exhausted from this.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I get food any easier? I mean, I have to think I would probably lose a lot of weight. I would probably lose a lot of weight myself. Like you know what I mean? Like if I had to work for my food like that.
Well, and they've done a lot of studies and they've shown that like if put a food bowl in front of a dog or you put a food puzzle, they'll almost always choose the puzzle. Like they like to work for their food. Yeah.
So I've tried this, the smaller Kong before. Mm-hmm. And so what do you put in there? You put the kibble and soft food in there?
So I fill it about halfway with kibble. And then I take the soft food, which I get from Ollie. I don't know if you've heard of Ollie. No. It's a food subscription, and you give their dietary restrictions and everything, and then they custom make you a food and send it to you every month. And I take the soft serve of that, and then I stuff it in there on top of the kibble as hard as I can, and then I put it in the freezer overnight and freeze it. And I freeze a bunch ahead of time, and then when I'm coming upstairs to do the show, I just grab one out of the freezer, bring it up, and she follows me. She knows what it is already. I throw it in her little bed, and boom.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like that. I wonder if Grover would like. The thing is, he I don't know. He sometimes, when I do that stuff, he just like walks away. So it's this is too complicated.
If he really likes his soft food, he'll probably go for it. Cause like, you got to make it so they don't get too frustrated. So that's why you don't pack it too hard. Cause if they get frustrated, they will walk away. But if he likes his soft food, then he'd probably be cool with it.
Yeah. Grover, what do you think about that? You like that idea? I like that idea. I think Grover's gonna like that idea. All right, everyone doing great in the chat? Yvonne says, hey, Devin, please stop screaming. It's too early. I don't know what Devin's screaming about.
Yeah, he's screaming about clicking the like button, it looks like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, hey, scream about that. Thank you, Devin. Click that like button. Smash that like button. We're not, you know, that's all we ask you to do. And subscribe, right? And subscribe to our daily newsletter, which is morninginvest.com. We had a really good newsletter this morning. I'm really proud of it today. Natalie and I put a lot of hard work into it, and it's totally free. You can read the news in about 5-6 minutes and be up to speed on a couple of stories that I think are really important. We cover the progressive news you're not going to see in other places with that angle to it. Some really interesting stories in there today, so check that out. All right, we also covered the eviction ban. And that's what we're going to talk about now. All right, let's talk about the eviction ban. That's the first story on our rundown this morning. Major shift in this overnight, and I want to give you some of the details, some of the behind the scenes on what happened here. So, bowing to pressure from Nancy Pelosi, President Biden bit the bullet and has extended that eviction ban. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily even Nancy Pelosi. I'll let you kind of figure out why this happened here in a second. I don't want to lead the witness. I will say bowing to pressure because he didn't think he could do this, or maybe he didn't want to do it. I mean, I'll leave that for you to decide. I mean, remember just a few days ago when the White House Economic Counsel, Brian Deese, we showed you that clip on Sunday from Sunday's show, right, where he basically said, hey, you know what? We just want states to spend that money on rental assistance, but we're done. Our hands are tied. We've already been out there helping. You know, we've already done our job.
I kind of feel like that's a cop-out because if I were the president of the United States and I thought that something wasn't right, I would ask everyone I could how to make it happen. Like, can I do this or not? Like, you have to at some level know he didn't want this. Otherwise, he would have.
Findings of their
Yeah, exactly.
He's the president.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you have an opportunity right now to be out in front of people leading on this issue for the last month. This was not a surprise, right? This was not a surprise. This we knew that this was coming, and we couldn't do anything about it. I'll let you decide on that. I'm going to show you the facts here. You decide.
Well, and really quick, all he would have to do is he would have to say, I'm going to have a press conference, and then he'd just pressure whoever's fault he felt it was to get it done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we same thing we talked about with the $15 an hour minimum wage, right? If he really, really wanted it, didn't just pay lip service to it, he would have led on that issue. He would have been at the podium talking about the need for $15 an hour minimum wage. The same thing is true on Amazon. He could have flown down to Alabama and stood with those union workers at Amazon and told them, like, here's what the power you get by unionizing, standing up to big business. He paid lip service to it, but didn't get to the podium. He didn't do more than that. And he could have done that. He also could have done that on that Senate parliamentarian issue back when the Senate basically said you can't do, you can't pass a state, you can't use the reconciliation process to pass $15 an hour minimum wage, et cetera. Like, he could have stood up to that and said, you know what, we're going to go around the Senate parliamentarian. I'm a leader. Just to give you some frame of reference on where things are right now as far as stocks for apartment companies. Stocks for apartment companies are up 42% right now. Big Wall Street landlords absolutely do not want their Democratic friends to extend this moratorium. You can absolutely be sure of that. Landlords have done absolutely brilliantly during this pandemic and during the eviction moratorium. I mean, raking in profit, these big companies, and yet they don't want an eviction moratorium. They can't handle it. But I wanted to bring you a little bit more about backstory of how the White House completely reversed its position from we can't issue a new eviction moratorium to suddenly we're going to issue a new eviction moratorium, as if this was our idea all along. So the first big item is that there was this enormous pressure, and we have to give a round of applause, I think, absolutely 100% to Cori Bush. Cori Bush, who basically was at the White House, on the Capitol steps, camped out on the Capitol steps. On Friday night, she writes, I came to the Capitol with my chair. She was there for 5 days. I refused to accept that Congress would leave for vacation while 11 million people faced eviction. For 5 days, we've been out here demanding that our government acts to save lives. Today, our movement moved mountains. Yes. Yes, Corey. Thank you. Civil disobedience. Nonviolent. Camped out for 5 days with people who, she, by the way, and it really helps, that she has experienced homelessness in her life. So she understands how defeating homelessness can be for Americans. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was also there, Mondaire Jones as well, in this public pressure campaign. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, that's fine. I was just going to say, remember yesterday we were talking, if these Congress people would just do things like this, like stand in, and there's somebody who gets a lot of, they're popular on Twitter, they get a lot of media attention, this is a way that they can do stuff. And it's you know, they just have to sit there and make it a public thing that they're not going to bow down to the pressure.
Yeah. I mean, we already saw it unfolding all across. I mean, as Brooke Jones says here, Cori Bush is a godsend. Thank you, Brooke, for saying that. I agree. I mean, this is, you stand up to people, right? This is what it looks like. You stand up to Washington. You stand up. Do you want, you know, Americans sleeping on the streets because we have an opportunity to do something? We have an opportunity to stand up to this. Now, I should point out that, you know, the way that the Hill frames it, I think, is absolutely right. Biden buys time with new eviction ban. So the issue here is that it allows them to put this eviction ban in place while the courts then have to end up dealing with it.
You know,
and that's what they should have done all along.
I have a question though. Like the guy that, like all the people that we just saw get evicted right after this happened, do they get to go back in the homes that they were just evicted from? Or, you know what I mean? Like those people moved all those people's furniture out and just left them there high and dry. Can they get back in now?
Well, first of all, I will push back on this idea that. Here's the issue. Okay, so let's break that down. It's a good question. You know, an eviction process takes weeks, 2 weeks at most, minimum in Texas. Okay, that's the state that's like probably moves the quickest with evictions. If you're trying to get an eviction in any other state, let's take New Jersey for example, it can take a very long time, and you have to hire a lawyer to do it. There's a whole process involved in getting this eviction process. So if on Saturday the eviction moratorium ends, no one's being evicted in 2 days. You know what I mean? Like it's not happening.
So that process had already started, is what you're saying.
That process had already started and was for some other reason. It could have been that, yes, they lied. The landlord lied to the judge that this is the reason I'm evicting this person is because of loud noise or some other garbage, right? That's we've heard that story before.
But
even
could
though
they have,
it was pandemic related, you know, they lost their job, but I'm going to blame it on noise.
Yeah. And that's what the guy said. He lost his job and that's why he wasn't paying rent. But could they not have started the process knowing that the moratorium ended that day? Like, could he have not started the process 2 weeks early saying, we're going to start the process now to get him out when that ends?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. And every state is different, you know, and certain states had their own extensions, but the federal version had run out on July 31st. So I, it, you know, really, I guess depends on when that process was started and if the sheriff then was enforcing this on the day that like they had, they would have had to have timed it perfectly. I just find it hard to believe that a Saturday and Sunday when the courts aren't open, that now it's Wednesday. Yeah. Something could have happened on Monday and Tuesday for sure. Like I'm not saying that that hasn't happened. I'm just saying the timeline is a little weird on that and it takes a long time to go through an eviction process. So, you know, I'm not quite sure if these people that we're seeing being evicted right now are suddenly, it's suddenly happening overnight. These courts are backed up too. I think that it's a long process.
And just another question, because I'm not really sure. Like, so when the money is sent out to federal government to the states, do the states divvy it out to the landlords or mm-hmm. to the tenant? Like, how does that work? Like, it's going to the landlords to cover people's rent, and then they say, okay, I'm going to cover this person for 3 months, this person for three. Like, how do they disperse that money to know who they're helping and all of that? Like, who gets it?
The landlord has to go to the state and get this disbursement. They have to show that, hey, my tenant, here's the lease, has not been paying rent. Here is proof that they have not been paying rent. And then they have to get like papers signed also by the, I think the tenant. It's a process, but the states have been terrible in doling out this rental assistance money. So they've been awful at it. And, you know, some of these governors have just not wanted to do it. And there's been obviously pressure from Wall Street to not do it. They'd rather have these tenants thrown out. They can clean the house out. They can sell the property. They can sell it to these big hedge funds. They can install new tenants, raise the rents. Rents are going up 25%. You know, they're making bank. So they don't, they want these tenants out of there. They don't want the money. People aren't taking this money. And by the way, a lot of people don't even know how to get the money. And the states haven't made it easy at all to get the money. New Jersey, for instance, is a perfect example. Perfect example. I've heard nightmares from people trying to get access to this rental assistance in some of these different
states. And again, states. I'm going to hammer on, if they would have just done a UBI from the beginning of this pandemic, we probably wouldn't be in this situation. If people, it's not, if they act like people don't want to pay their rent. They act like it's people's fault that they lost their jobs during a pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, like, look at Canada, $2,000 a month. So, you know, but of course the right wing on the right wing talking points on this is that, you know, that's just going to keep you from working. It's, you know, we can't afford that. We can't give out assistance to people like that. You know, our economy is turning around. Look at these stock prices. The stock market is doing great.
Well, and how many people are like, when does the eviction moratorium end in Canada? Like, when are they going to be facing eviction? Just out of curiosity.
They don't have an eviction issue.
Wait, so they're not throwing their citizens out into the streets right now?
No.
Because they,
no,
and they're getting money? Wow.
No. Imagine trying to do this in Europe. It's not going to happen.
Oh,
you
no.
You're not going to evict somebody in Europe.
They would have manure. The farmers would come in with their tractors with cow manure and spread it all over your building, all over you. Like, they don't take that stuff.
No. No. No, they don't. And, you know, it's interesting to see some of the back and forth here and the details here. You know, you had Cori Bush there on the steps camped out. You know, that really put a lot of pressure on President Biden to do this. And according to reports, this was key. This was absolutely key with her being there for pushing on Biden. So all you had this huge anger from the left. So doing nothing was not an option. And then behind the scenes, as Jeff Stein reports for the Washington Post, Speaker Pelosi phoned President Biden in recent days and urged him to reverse course and extend the eviction ban. Pelosi also pressed Steve Ricchetti and Chief of Staff Ron Klain on phone calls. Pelosi was adamant that executive action was the only path to change here. But it was interesting because she was tweeting about this, right? She says, you know, the CDC has the power to extend the eviction moratorium as they double down on masks. They extend the moratorium in light of the Delta variant. Why wouldn't they? She was basically trying to say that they have the power to do this. So this new moratorium lasts until October 3rd, despite possible legal challenges from landlords.
How in the world does the CDC have that power?
Well, that's
like
the thing.
When was power granted to them for this?
They don't have this power. This is the whole point. So, you know, Pelosi here, you know, she says, she tweets on this on August 1st, right? By the way, August 1st. So the eviction moratorium ended on, you know, on the 31st, July 31st. Like, you could have done something in Congress well before this time. And she knows it. She knows it. And she knows that the big Democratic money guys, the real estate guys on Wall Street, didn't want this extension, right? So now she's saying, well, the CDC, it's in your court. You could do something about this, right? So she apparently engaged in a frantic round of phone calls and lobbying President Biden on this at the last minute. And apparently during one conversation with Pelosi, Biden said that his legal advisors were warning him that he couldn't extend the moratorium because of that June 29th Supreme Court ruling, which we covered here on the show. You remember the business-friendly Supreme Court. They let the moratorium stand, but then Justice Brett Kavanaugh said that the CDC had exceeded its existing statutory authority and that Congress must act to extend the ban. So the CDC doesn't have the power. And Pelosi knows that the CDC doesn't have the authority. But she's pretending that she does. She's pretending that they do. All she needed to do was go right to the White House's website. It's plain as day. Look at this. Right on the whitehouse.gov website. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court has made clear that this option is no longer available. We cannot extend. The CDC cannot extend the eviction moratorium. In June, when the CDC extended the eviction moratorium until July 31st, the Supreme Court's ruling stated that clear and specific congressional authorization would be necessary for the CDC to extend the moratorium past July 31st.
I mean, it is a good way for Pelosi to be like, oh, I'm sorry, donors. Those doggone CDC people passed it. We didn't.
Yeah, so I mean, hey,
you can still donate to us.
We didn't bring anything up in Congress. I didn't bring it to the floor of Congress to make this moratorium. Like, I didn't create a law. Instead, I went on vacation.
And so I didn't tweet it until after it was over.
Yeah, and I waited until August 1st for this tweet to go out, guys. So you can still donate money to us, right? It's August 1st. CDC, you have the power to do this. I'll show some teeth here. So when Biden decided to make his announcement on Tuesday night, on the new moratorium, the first person he called was Pelosi, who just finished a caucus call. And so she said in a statement she released, "Today is a day of extraordinary relief," she says in her statement. "Thanks to the leadership of President Biden, the imminent fear of eviction and being put out on the streets has been lifted for countless families across America. Help is here," she writes. "Help is here," she writes.
So I guess now the CDC are the bad guys, so now we shouldn't believe anything they say?
I guess. Here's Kamala Colbert. Can you take the show for a second? Sorry, I got to get this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No worries. So, yeah, can you imagine the phone call with Biden and Pelosi? She's probably just sitting there eating ice cream. These people, it's so funny because these people don't care, you know? Like, they wait. They knew this was coming. For how long? How long did they know this was coming? They knew, let's say at the very least, they knew a month in advance. It was way before that, but let's say it was just a month. And they wait until it's actually done. And who knows how many people have already been kicked out of their homes because of this. Like that one day or whatever, or however many days it was. So that was passed. This is the fourth. So in those 3 days, I wonder how many people are out. You know what I mean? And what's going to happen to those people? Can they go, well, you kicked me out. I'm going to go back and try to get in my house now. There was a lady that literally moved into her car that day. So what happens to her now?
Well, that's a great point. I'm sorry, I was listening from afar. I had to get a package for the studio here that was just arriving right in the middle of the show. And no one's home. No one's home here at the studio to grab it. Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, if you look at these people who did lose their homes, they're out now. They're homeless. And you have somebody like this person who Jeff Stein pointed out, Kamala Koble, 30, of Kansas City, spent 3 hours today in court after the landlord filed for eviction. Works full-time and was terrified of impact of eviction on her daughter, 12 years old. On the White House eviction ban, it's like finding a buoy in the middle of the ocean after kicking so long to stay above the waves. Thank you, Grover.
Get him, boy. One of those frozen things come in handy right now.
That's true. The doorbell rings. But you know, so worrying about losing your home, you're spending 3 hours in eviction court, you can't work, you know, you're and working full time, like, so behind on her payments because of the pandemic, goes back to work, is working full time now, but is still behind. I mean, this is where stimulus, right? This is where universal basic income, this is where something would have helped. So to make sure that this doesn't happen. So even with her having a full-time job, a daughter, and a home that she lives in facing eviction, she can't get caught up. Like, how is she going to get caught up the thousands of dollars that she's out now because her job was gone. That's what, you know, that's what.
And how many countries, took care of their people during the entire pandemic? How many countries? Like if you look at the number of countries that completely, like, at least paid like 50, 80%, even if they would have given us 50, 60% of our wages during this, we could have been fine. Like people don't understand how good the economy was doing when this first happened and we got those first checks and the, what was it, $600 a week in unemployment?
Mm-hmm.
Like people right. were paying their bills. Everything was, it was going well. And that was not a good litmus test for you to understand that that's all it would have been if you would have just done a UBI and taken care of us like every other country did.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things where Grover, sorry. I want to pretend. Well, no, I don't want to pretend. I would, you know, you'd like to sit back and say, "Wow, they really, you know, our government has always looked out for us, right? We pay into a system, we're the greatest country in the world. They always support us." And sure, wouldn't it be great for other countries to look up to America because they always take care of their people, right? They always support their people. They have great health care. They have, during a pandemic, America is the leader in the world. What do? They were able to provide for their people. Instead, Congress defers to Wall Street and corporate interests and big money. You know, and now these people are unable to get caught up. And we're kicking the can down the street. I mean, I think this sums it up. The Biden buys time. That's really all it is. Buys time.
Can you remember a time in history where there was a crisis that was affecting us that they helped us and not the donors, not the big businesses? I mean, look at the 2008 bailouts when like 5 million people or so lost their homes or something like mm-hmm. that. And who'd they bail out? They bailed out the businesses. They bailed out Wall Street.
Right.
And you look at something like Iceland, where they jailed the bankers, they bailed out the people because they had done the same thing. They had a housing crisis and they completely recovered right away. We're still technically not fully recovered from that time.
No.
But those businesses that they saved that were making risky investments, they helped them, but we got screwed. So I'd like to know, when was the last time there was a crisis that affected us that they actually helped us and not Wall Street?
Good question. I mean, hey, what about Obamacare, right? That's has nothing to do with propping up prescription drug companies and Wall Street, right? And insurance companies like that. That totally helps people, right? No,
right. No, that wasn't. No. Uh-uh. They sure sold it as if it did.
I got one. The war in Iraq, right? Like Iraq is coming for us. So we got to go in there because they had these weapons of mass destruction and we got to protect ourselves.
Nope. Somebody said the last time was the New Deal President Roosevelt.
Okay. The New Deal. Yeah. I was probably the New Deal. I mean, maybe Lyndon Johnson passing voting rights legislation or civil rights legislation. Maybe. Maybe that. Have to go back to the 1960s, though, right?
But that's like, so if you have that history, okay, you've got that long, that history, why do we keep thinking they're going to help us now? Why do we sit here and argue about this and get on a two sides an issue and fight ourselves this hard, saying, oh no, they're Democrats, they're going to help us, and the Republicans people are like, oh no, it's socialism, it's socialism. They've got us fighting each other like worse than we've ever fought each other before, thinking that we're going to get something from either side, and they've never helped us. So when does that become the definition of insanity? Voting these people in and thinking they're going to be the one to help us. Biden's going to be the one to help us. This person's going to be the one to help us, and they never do.
Yeah. I mean, we got a story coming up here on Nina Turner. There was an opportunity. We'll get to that story. Someone who actually tells the truth and actually cares and actually could have made a difference. We'll get to that story. But big money gets in the way once again. Big money interests. And maybe that's why, move on to our next story here. Maybe that's why Andrew Cuomo doesn't look like he's going to resign anytime soon because of all of his Wall Street money and influence. It's trying to keep him there. If you look up the words like smug or arrogant or self-serving or totally condescending or has a God complex or a host of other things, they should all have a picture of Andrew Cuomo right next to them.
I just Googled that and it's a picture of the Congress building.
Is it really?
No.
But, well, it should have Cuomo. You could put Congress, you could put Cuomo. It doesn't matter. Right next to it. I mean, how else would you describe New York Governor's transparently kindergarten teacher tone that he took yesterday during that briefing? I mean, he just basically dismissed out of hand the new allegations that have now been leveled by the Attorney General of New York on sexual harassment by 11 women, backed up by 179 witnesses. That's like going to a sporting event. How many people saw this happen, right?
But then he's basically like, no, it's cool. I sexually assault everyone. Guys, yeah. LGBTQ.
I'm an equal opportunity groper. You know, I will grope anybody. So this is not like I'm not picking one person or one gender here. I'm an equal opportunity groper. You know, you think about court cases, you know, I mean, I actually sat on a jury during a court thing in Orlando one time for jury duty. And like there was one witness. That one witness sent this guy away for life in prison for murdering someone. Like one witness. There were 179 witnesses that have seen him do this stuff and that were interviewed during this independent investigation conducted by New York's Attorney General, Letitia James. Here's how she broke this story. Here's how she broke this story yesterday at this press conference.
Investigation into allegations of sexual harassment made against Governor Andrew Cuomo. I'll make a brief statement and then turn it over to Ms. Clark and to Mr. Kim, who will delve into the investigation's findings. The independent investigation has concluded that Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed multiple women, and in doing so violated federal and state law. Specifically, the investigation found that Governor Andrew Cuomo sexually harassed current and former New York State employees by engaging in unwelcome and non-consensual touching and making numerous offensive comments of a suggestive and sexual nature that created a hostile work environment for women. The investigators independently corroborated and substantiated these facts through interviews and evidence, including contemporaneous notes and communications.
So there you go. 11 women, 179 witnesses. And one of these women is a state trooper, by the way. Like the audacity to, you know, she was put on his detail. And he's groping her. And now President Biden has called on Cuomo to resign. President Biden has now said, you got to get out of there. So will he? And a number of governors have come forward as well. It sure doesn't sound like he is if you listen to him. Listen to him during this press conference yesterday. Actually, it was behind closed doors. He made this. So no reporters, by the way, were allowed in this room to ask questions. But by the way, the Letitia James, the attorney general, they stood there and faced reporters' questions. But Cuomo isn't.
Explaining what it was that Emily was just talking about. Listen here.
Now, the state already has an advanced sexual harassment training program for all employees, including me. But I want New York State government to be a model of office behavior. And I-
Did we lose Clayton? Am I still here?
I accept responsibility, and we are making changes.
Okay. That's what we're doing? Were you guys able to hear that?
No, we kind of lost you right when you started that. Oh, you froze up.
Let's play that again. So here is Governor Cuomo let's cut this so it's clean. But so here's Governor Cuomo yesterday. Reporters were not allowed in the room. And here was his response to this new attorney general investigation that he, yes, he had groped, you know, and or sexually assaulted 11 women with 179 witnesses, one of them being a state trooper. So reporters weren't allowed in when he made these comments.
Explaining what it was that Emily was just talking about. Listen here.
Now, the state already has an advanced sexual harassment training program for all employees, including me. But I want New York State government to be a model of office behavior. And I have brought in an expert to design a new sexual harassment policy and procedures and to train the whole team, myself included. I accept responsibility and we are making changes.
Wait a minute. So let's be clear. We're bringing in to do some sexual harassment training, and I'll be a part of it too.
They're going to use me as a case study.
Right. My whole team is going to be a part of it, but they're not the problem. I am. So I guess I will take part in this as well. Listen,
if that's
to that
not
smug
deflection.
Fool. I mean, listen to this guy. I mean, this was the guy, and by the way, this was the guy, of course, that lied about COVID cases at nursing homes, lied about the deaths at nursing homes, covered that up, and wrote a book talking about his great leadership during a time of tragedy. He had time to lie to us about what was happening at those nursing homes, and then also, by the way, have members of his own staff go out and do a PR campaign. Remember. To try to get local mayors to support him and basically say, hey, we know you're not a fan of the fact that he lied to you, but we need you to just get on board, just support him. And then he has time to write a book during the pandemic on how great his leadership is. And Democrats were getting all excited, like, here's the future of the party. You know, here's somebody that can stand up to Trump. We're going to push this guy. This guy's going to be our guy. So you had the mainstream media, which is like, oh, I don't know if we should cover this story. CNN was like, I don't know if we should cover this story or not. And then we find out in this investigation, his brother, Chris Cuomo, anchor on CNN, had been advising his older brother, giving him advice and strategy sessions on how to speak to the media about all of this. So should Chris Cuomo also be asked to step aside? Like, is his integrity as an anchor, as a trusted anchor and reporter, now compromised? I'll leave that for you to decide. I mean, he's advising a guy, so he knows what's going on here, and he's giving him advice, and then he's going on the air and reporting on it and not disclosing that? Doesn't he have a right to say, here's the story, by the way, I've been advising my brother. I've been telling him what to say in the media. But I got to say, no one's buying this BS. No one. Not me, not anyone. I hope no one watching right now is buying his BS. He gave a fake apology because he couched it within the framework that he never meant for any of the women to be uncomfortable. He's like, I'm sorry they were uncomfortable. That's their fault for being uncomfortable. That's not an apology.
Yeah, my mother and father used to do that to me. I mean, I that's just what I do to people. I kiss them. I hug them.
I grope them. You know, I put my hand down their pants. Like, it's what we do in New York. You know,
yeah. What are you gonna do?
That's how I do things up here in Albany. You know, I'm sorry. That's what we do here in Albany. You know, I put my hand down people's pants.
Hey, Vinny, we doing tongues today? We just doing lips? What are we doing?
I smack them on the butt. That's okay. You know, it's what we do up here. You don't want to work in my administration, then you know, pound sand. I mean, apologies aren't conditional, and they don't come with the implication that the person to whom you're apologizing is the one who made the mistake, right? Like, I'm sorry you felt uncomfortable. Like, it's like you smash into somebody's car, and they're parked, right? They're parked there, and you smash into them. Like, I'm sorry that you were parked at this really inconvenient spot, and then your car got smashed by me. You know, impact always is greater than intention, right? It matters not at all what his intentions were. What was the impact of those, his actions? Care about the impact. Put that above your intentions for once. You know, so what's next? Yep.
Brooke Jones is saying, hey, that's his brother. Any loving siblings would try to help each other. I kind of excuse Chris. And I'm kind of in that camp too. Like, you know, like, yeah, it's not good, but it's definitely not, you know. I mean, unless he absolutely knew what his brother had done. Maybe he believed what his brother said.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he lied to him. I mean, who knows the inner workings of that? I'm just saying, if he's covering this story, and I know that the CNN made a statement and he then was pulling himself off of doing any stories on this, but which is also laughable, right? Because he went to great lengths to promote his brother during the pandemic, having him on regularly to talk about how great he's handling everything.
And mom's spaghetti.
Right. But then, you know, yeah, I talked about mom's spaghetti. And then once the story breaks about the nursing home, suddenly they're quiet about it. I love the duplicity of that. But Attorney General James is not moving forward with federal charges. Why not? The state now could file charges, but we won't know if they will. We don't know if they will. So it's going to be up to the state, I guess. Cuomo could be impeached by the New York State Assembly. Now, if that happens, here's something interesting on the impeachment front. It's different than a president, because if Cuomo is impeached during that process, he has to immediately cede power to his lieutenant governor during that whole process. So that process starts, he's done. He has to cede power right to his lieutenant governor. So will Andrew Cuomo resign? Let me know in the chat. Get to more news here. We can talk about the stimulus in a minute. Got more news to get to, but I want to tell you about our friends over at Honey. A huge fan of Honey. We all shop online. We've all seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout from time to time. Like, hey, do you have a promo code to get this thing for a discount? Darn it. Well, now thanks to Honey, it's totally free, by the way. It's a free browser extension. You can download it on Safari, on Chrome, any browser. And it sits right at the top of your browser. So when you're on different websites that you're shopping, it'll search for coupons for you. It supports over 30,000 stores online. So imagine you're on one of your sites and all of a sudden when you're checking out, the little Honey button suddenly drops down. This happened to me. I was checking out on a site, an electronic site, and as I was checking out to get some camera cables, the little Honey thing just dropped down and it found a promo code and I saved some money on my order. I didn't have to do anything. It's fantastic. Totally free. And I saved a bunch of money on these cables that I needed for the studio. They have 17 million members. They've saved them over $2 billion. Again, it's free. So here's what you do. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out on some free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting our show. So get Honey for free. You got to go to the website. It's joinhoney.com. You have to put that join on there. Okay. It's joinhoney.com/invest. So everyone repeat after me in the chat. Let's see how many people pay attention in the chat right now. Lori says, I use honey. Wicked Insanity says, I have Honey right now. Okay, type it out in the chat and see how many people can type it fastest here in the chat. It's joinhoney.com/invest. Joinhoney.com/invest to get that free browser extension. Awesome sauce. Thank you, guys. Love Honey, Lori says. Honey, how you doing? John says. Kristen says, I have Honey. Spelled it right? Joinhoney.com/invest. That's right. All right. All right, let's talk about some troubling news this morning coming out of the stimulus negotiations and what is going to happen here around the future of the bipartisan infrastructure plan. Let's start on taxes. Okay, let's start on taxes. And I'm really troubled and want to understand how the hell this managed to get inside of the stimulus bill. Why is this in here right now? So this is the latest. Infrastructure bill floats national mileage fee despite Biden's $400,000 tax hike red line. So yes, inside of the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, it would institute a multi-year national motor vehicle per mile user fee pilot program. Without future intervention from the White House, this could potentially violate one of President Biden's previously stated red lines. Top White House officials emphatically stated for months that paying for the infrastructure investments by indexing gas taxes to inflation or instituting new electric vehicle mileage fees were hard red lines that the president would not support. And yet, it's in there. Why and how? Yet the new per mile user fee outlined in the bill does leave those people open to tax vulnerabilities pegged to personal vehicle mileage. How did Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg allow that to get in there? They are directing to provide recommendations to Congress 3 years into the pilot's life cycle. So Pete Buttigieg is on board with this? So is Janet Yellen? We were told it wasn't going to be in there. Why is it in there? They included, White House officials dispute the idea that the inclusion of the pilot program in the infrastructure bill guarantees the establishment of a national mileage fee. Oh, so it's just a pilot program, guys, just to study it. Like, it's just going to look at us charging you more for taxes on for gas. It's just a pilot program. Nothing to see here. Just a pilot program. But the White House is pushing back on this, saying there's literally nothing in the bill that is counter to the president's pledge. This simply refers to two provisions about research. Just research, guys. One gives grants to states if they want to apply to do their own research on gas taxes, okay? The second involves a federal pilot program based on individual volunteers who receive full refunds for studies that would then only be the basis for recommendations about future legislation. That makes perfect sense. Let me read that again, because I think it really is spot on. Okay. The second involves a federal pilot program based on individual volunteers who receive full refunds for studies that would then only be the basis for recommendations about the future of legislation.
Say what?
What the hell does that mean?
That almost sounds like the definition of gain of function.
Gain of function research, exactly. What? Like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make any sense to me. They're going to evaluate the legislation, including any bills relevant to these pilot programs, against the $400,000 pledge. So, in other words, get ready for gas taxes to go up. Among the other things that I'm not happy about is the overall infrastructure bill's attempt to basically ignore climate change, it seems. So as some are calling it, and many progressives saying, you know, this is starting to look like, now that we're deep diving into this, we're calling this the Exxon infrastructure bill. And because of how little money is devoted to making us competitive in the world when it comes to the transition away from fossil fuels. I mean, this looks like the Exxon infrastructure bill. An infrastructure bill that doesn't prevent a full-blown climate catastrophe by funding a swift transition to renewable energy would kill millions of Americans. Bipartisan legislation falls short of President Biden's commitment to transforming the fossil fuel underpinnings of the U.S. economy. The deal includes hundreds of billions of dollars to support climate resilience, electric grid updates, and hardened infrastructure against cyber attacks and climate change, as well as more than a half a trillion for new public works projects. It does not, however, establish a clean energy electricity standard, nor a civilian climate corps, and includes just $7.5 billion for EV charging stations. Environmental advocates have slammed the bill, saying it's clear that the deal does not meet the moment on climate or justice. Looks like the Exxon infrastructure bill. That's what she says. An infrastructure bill that doesn't prevent a full-blown climate catastrophe by funding a swift transition to renewable energy would kill millions of Americans.
What, in a world where Trump is more environmentally friendly than Biden?
Yes, exactly.
Nothing makes sense.
Exactly, Janine. It is, I mean, it's a crazy world out there, right? Senator Ed Markey said the bill was a good start, adding Democrats would pass a separate $3.5 trillion package without GOP support to deal with the climate crisis in the magnitude, scope, and the scale that's required. Oh, okay. So we'll see here. We're going to hold them to this. So here's the thing, right? Okay, this was supposed to include environmental impact. This bill, The first bill, the bipartisan bill, was supposed to include a massive energy restructuring in the United States to deal with the 21st century's needs, right, for electric energy. And it doesn't. So now we're punting it, and we're saying, oh, as Ed Markey is saying right here, the bill was a good start. But, you know, we don't have GOP support. So now we're going to deal with the climate crisis and the magnitude and scope that's required in the new bill, the other bill, the $3.5 trillion package. Okay. We'll see if that happens. So, but no one's, you know, but you have big, the problem is you don't have the support for this. And no one's calling this out in the mainstream media. No one's asking the questions of Joe Manchin as to why, he is, you know, opposed to this. Why is he opposed to clean energy legislation? Well, it's because of his coal interests. The corporate news is not covering this story. You know, when he's on CNBC with Shepard Smith doing an interview, no questions about his coal interests. In fact, new research shows that that if you do a NexisLexis research to find out how many corporate media entities have actually covered Manchin's corporate conflict with coal industry, only two have covered it, and they only did it tangentially. They barely even touched on it. Let me point this out here. So here was one. The New Yorker had an 8,000-word piece. Out of government, he had become a successful coal broker, running a firm called Enner Systems. In his most recent Senate disclosures, he and his wife, Gail, reported a net worth of between $4 million and $13 million from the coal. That's it. That's all they mentioned. That's just that little blurb. Then the other one was from the New York Times. Mentions it a little bit. Manchin had already made millions from his involvement with coal broker firms Enner Systems, which he had helped run before entering politics, and which continued to pay him dividends thereafter.
Well, didn't his daughter get some kind of $20 million contract out of something?
There was definitely some family stuff. I don't remember the exact details and how much money.
Well, I know it was $20 million. I don't know the details of how, but...
But, you know, every single news article about Manchin and the climate bill should name this conflict. Every reporter asking Manchin how he feels about the climate provisions in the infrastructure bill should also be asking about his private interests in the bill. Is that not fair game? Like he said on CNN last week how he was deeply, deeply worried about some of the climate legislation that was going to be in the infrastructure bill. He's deeply worried about it. Why? Because he's getting funneled money, millions of dollars from big coal. Of course he's not interested in helping or changing that. Are we surprised by this at all? So if Ed Markey says that we're going to wait till the $3.5 trillion human interest stimulus package before we actually have meaningful moves on climate legislation, good luck. Good luck when you've got a guy like this sitting right there. Good luck when Joe Manchin's sitting right there. How is he going to be one of the 50 votes if there's substantial reductions in coal emissions?
Well, that's the thing. These people get involved. It's like Pelosi, you know, becoming a 100 millionaire while in office. These people become millionaires, tens of millions of dollars while they're in the Senate or Congress. They should not be allowed to be like, they should have to recuse themselves from things like that if they have any kind of interest. They should have to, if they're going to take those positions, they need to lose any interest they have in the public sector anyway. Like, it's right. Because they can form legislation, they can push legislation, they can not push it. Like, don't worry, industry, don't worry, oil guys, I'm not going to push this. They need my vote, so you're good. You know, these people should not be allowed to do that.
Well, and it's the same thing with Trump. You know, we asked Trump, like, recuse yourself, you sell off your, you know, your Trump holdings, et cetera, right? Like, and we know how, you know, how much he made during the because of his all of his different interests as a result. He didn't. And Nancy Pelosi, as you mentioned, becoming a multimillionaire 10 times over because of, you know, working on legislation and overseeing different regulations for different companies and the very companies that she's investing in. So she knows how this legislation is going to go in Congress, and she's investing in these companies. I mean, heck, reporters, like tech reporters, famously don't invest in tech companies so they can be impartial, right? I remember like Leo Laporte, you know, famous podcaster Leo Laporte. You know, he was like, I don't invest in any company. I don't invest in Apple because I report on Apple all the time. So how can I be impartial about Apple? Right? How can I invest in Google if I'm here reporting on Google? How can I invest in these companies if I'm literally in the House of Representatives driving regulation that's going to affect these companies? And I already know ahead of time. Isn't that insider trading? But Martha Stewart goes away for a couple of years.
Well, and it makes sense. I mean, we the people, we only pay them a meek $175,000 a year plus furniture budget. So I can understand when you've got a lobbyist sitting in your office saying, hey, we'll dump $2 million into your super PAC. If you get this bill through, let's see, $175,000 from the people that I'm supposed to represent or $2 million from the lobbyist. Yeah, you know what? I've been really wanting that pool and that awning over my backyard. I'll take the $2 million. You got yourself a deal. People, sorry.
Screw you.
If you pay me a little more, you know? Where are the people lobbyists?
Screw you, people. As Sludge's David Moore points out, Manchin in 1998 founded a coal brokerage firm, Enter Systems, that sells coal to local power plants. He has since passed it on to his son, but it continues to be a lucrative gig for the senator. His latest financial disclosure reported $492,000 of income from Enter Systems stock for 2020. Just stock? Since he took office in 2010, he's made more than $4.5 million off of coal. But he really has the interest of West Virginians at heart. Forget your $15 an hour minimum wage, because West Virginians don't need it.
Oh, He's making money off the backs of one of the poorest populations in the United States.
Exactly. So they don't need $15 an hour minimum wage. My West Virginians are doing just fine here, as he says. They're happy with $11 an hour. I would raise it to $11 an hour, because West Virginia, they don't need more than that. Have you been to West Virginia? Everyone's rich here. Heartbreaking, these idiots. Heartbreaking, these morons. Oh, we've got more news to get to. I want to talk about this. Let's talk about what happened in Ohio last night. This is really sad. Now, if you ever wanted to see how big Wall Street money can destroy a democracy, then look no further than what happened in Nina Turner last night. If you ever want to see how big Wall Street money can buy an election, then look no further than what happened in Nina Turner last night. Former co-chair of the Bernie Sanders 2020 most recent campaign in 2020. Now, she lost a progressive powerhouse. She was a progressive powerhouse who devoted herself to telling the truth about big money, big Wall Street, and having the audacity to say something that I guess she can't say, that Palestinians have a right to be free. And you know what? Also free of missile attacks by Israel. Can you say that? I guess not, because she lost. Thanks to millions of dollars in corporate money from pro-Israeli super PACs pouring in over the last few days to help her opponent. An establishment hack with a history of dirty dealings. That's who we elect in the United States. Because when big money and corporations run things, we can't have nice things. That's what happened last night. Sadly, look at this money that poured in ahead of the primary, just over the weekend, okay? This is the money that poured in, huge bags of money poured in. And the company that did it was DMFI, a super PAC, a pro-Israeli super PAC that has spent more opposing Nina Turner than nearly all the other outside spending combined. More than Ohio Women Rising, more than MoveOn.org, more than the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Look at that. You know what stinks too is Nina Turner would have been a power. She wouldn't have been one of the squad. She would have been like, she'd have been a powerhouse. Like that's somebody, that's the kind of person we need in there.
Exactly.
Because she doesn't take any guff. She will say like, she's even like, you know, calling out Sanders for what he's done. She is a take no prisoners. I mean, she would tell it like it is and she would vote the right way for everything.
Yeah. I mean, here's Bernie Sanders over the weekend. Talking about why all this big money is pouring into this campaign. It was an interesting interview.
Well, I have known Nina Turner for many years, and I know her to be one of the strongest fighters for justice that I've ever met in my life. And the reason that the big money interests, the drug companies and the insurance companies and the fossil fuel industry and Wall Street are spending millions of dollars trying to defeat her is precisely because they understand she has the courage to stand up to them and fight for a government that works for all and not just the few. So that's why I'm here.
Senator Turner, we just heard it a little bit a second ago from CNN asking about a narrative out there that you're a disruptor in the party and that could potentially, some say, be bad for the party. Is that fair? And maybe do we need
to disrupt? No, it's not fair, but, you know, life is not fair. As my grandmother used to tell me, you know, Congressman John Lewis once said, make good trouble. That's what I'm here to do on behalf of the people who need it the most, the people who are suffering, the people who don't have a roof over their head, the people who don't know where their next meal is going to come from, the people who are underemployed and unemployed in this district. And as Clevelanders know, I've been working, I've been on this journey for a very long time.
There's 100 million people that didn't vote, that don't vote in our elections because neither of these parties speak to them. Mm-hmm. They're basically one party, right? And they have corporate interests at heart. That's all they are. Right. And they change wherever the Wall Street wind blows, they go with it.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened to Nina Turner. You know, that's exactly what happened to Nina Turner in Ohio. She got sandbagged by big money and corporate interests. And that's, and it's interesting to see, like, the mainstream media covered the story. The mainstream media on the story was basically like, well, it looks like the establishment candidate won. The establishment candidate in the party, like reading CNN, it didn't frame it as, Wall Street money, you know, swooped in to put a candidate in office with the other candidate, and stomp all over Nina Turner. No, that's not how they covered it. The establishment candidate won, and even that question from that reporter, like, you know, you're seen as like possibly a disruptor. You know, CNN says you're a disruptor to the party. Oh, really? What's so disruptive about wanting Medicare for all? Literally, wanting Medicare for all and for people to stop bombing other people.
You know what's funny? I know I'm going to get some hate for what I'm about to say, but when I was in 2012, I helped the Ron Paul campaign. And when we would go to do events, the big media people would be out there. And on camera, they were all like, do we hate this person or whatever? Then the camera was off. Man, we really like Ron Paul. We hope he gets in. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have their talking points that they have to push out. But a lot of these people behind the scenes know that the Democratic Party is completely hijacked, completely screwed. So they know that somebody like Nina is a good thing.
Exactly. It's the same thing with Republicans, like you just mentioned, with Ron Paul. I mean, I worked at Fox, right? That's where I worked. And I was an independent. I was a progressive there. And I never shied away from that. I always asked tough questions of whether it was Republican or Democrat. I think by being an independent from Philadelphia, I could ask those questions from both sides. So no one ever knew what my politics was because I always just asked tough questions of both sides. And off camera, people loved Ron Paul, but they would never say that on camera, you know, because here's a guy who wanted to end foreign intervention in wars, but you can't say that on Fox, can you? No way.
Heck no.
You can't do that.
Wanted to end the drug war. Can't say that.
No, you can't say that either, right? So corporate interest, baby. All of these billionaire, you know, news media networks that are just driven by this money. They love war. They love the extension of war. They love propping up Wall Street. They love big pharmaceutical companies. They love big tech. So you can't talk about it. Can't talk about Nina. Here was her concession speech last night.
You will be hearing from us soon. We are going to do great things together, and I've always said that throughout this campaign. We are going to continue to do great things together. And all of you are on that list of helping us do this. We are going to continue to travel all over this country to ensure that progressives are not left alone when evil lurks. Hello, somebody.
So you're going to hear more from us, is what she said. Great.
You know what's really sad and what really shows the Democratic Party does not mean what they say? Here you have, so they always want to throw us corporatists like Clinton, Kamala Harris, like corporate establishment candidates. Whereas if you would like to have the first female president, like, be something that is actually a good thing, Nina Turner would be perfect. Why wouldn't a party get behind a person like that, knowing that they would disrupt the party, make it better, and potentially somebody that people would vote for president? If they're going to put Kamala Harris up against Trump, she's going to lose. You know what I mean?
She's absolutely going to lose. She, you know, Kamala Harris right now in the rundown, Kamala Harris is wildly unpopular. And this is really troubling for Democrats. This is really troubling for Democrats. And they've got to do some soul searching about where the future of this party is going. Because right now, if the future of this party is another sort of Hillary Clinton hack job, where you don't even know what she stands for, and she blows wherever the corporate wind takes her, then the Democratic Party should just fold up and, you know, fold up its cards and go home. Because after 6 months in the White House right now, the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, has become the most unpopular vice president since the 1970s. Recent polls have revealed that Kamala Harris's ratings have hit a record low. Right now, a majority of Americans disapprove of her job performance. And a new local poll reported in the local media, take a look at this, it shows that Harris's ratings have dipped so low that she's now being she's being indicated in the polling as, quote, underwater in a poll.
Yeah, they were saying even Dan Quayle wasn't, quote unquote, underwater.
Wow. I mean, Dan Quayle. And
I would have to say he's probably like the least popular of all the vice presidents in recent history.
The problem for Kamala, is that she doesn't stand for anything, and we don't know where she stands, and she changes with the wind, just like Hillary Clinton. Oh, and by the way, as someone pointed out in our chat just a few minutes ago, Hillary Clinton was the first to support Nina Turner's opponent. You know, it's like, what does that tell you, right? Coming out, supporting the opponent of Nina Turner, just going right for the establishment.
I mean, if you look at what they did to Tulsi Gabbard, you know, when she supported Bernie, she would have been another perfect person for the establishment to get behind. Not the establishment, but the Democratic Party. It's like they don't want to get behind anybody that's actually going to grow the party. These people could expand the party, and they're actually truth tellers, you know, and they're actually for the people. That's the problem right there. Like I was saying earlier, if anything is for the people, it is not going to fit into their agenda, and they're going to do everything they can to keep those kind of people out of here, because Nina Turner would be the perfect one for the Democratic Party to prop up.
I mean, let's talk about that. Why won't the Democratic Party go after a Nina Turner, right? Why wouldn't the Democratic Party say, wait a second, like, there's 100 million people that haven't voted that are incredibly underserved in this nation. And very often they're going to, you know, some of those people are going to go towards Trump because he's speaking about draining the swamp. He's speaking about jobs going overseas. He's speaking about all of these corporate interests that are ruining America, right? He's speaking about it, okay? And he's a businessman and so forth. So he could sway some of those people to his side. Instead of going after that 100 million, they continue to try to go after the same groups, the same corporate interests, year after year after year, and barely squeak by and lose seats in the House of Representatives under Nancy Pelosi. Like, they're supposed to be cheerleading the fact that that Chantel Brown won as the corporate candidate, as the establishment candidate. That Nancy Pelosi retains control of the House of Representatives by such a slim margin. Instead, the Democratic Party could go the opposite direction, which is to reach out to these 100 million people and chart a new path and say, you know what? The old way of us having corporate interests and really focusing on Wall Street didn't work. It hasn't worked. And we noticed that Bernie Sanders has struck a chord. He was winning until the DNC sunk him, right? We know that these candidates like AOC really strike a chord. We know that Nina Turner was really striking a chord and speaking to exactly the problems that we have in America.
Did you see her poll numbers at the beginning? Like, nobody was even close to her.
Yeah.
Not like her close poll numbers, yeah, they were. There was no way any of them were going to catch her,
unless this kind of money pours in, unless millions of dollars from establishment super PACs pour in. Look at that. you know, pro-Israeli super PACs. And by the way, Republicans. Republicans were donating also to the establishment candidate.
Well, that's because Republicans and Democrats, when it comes to the donor class, are all the same. They all,
they're all
like
the
Manchin and what's his name, Lindsey Graham. They were having a party together, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're on a boat together. That's how we got COVID, on Manchin's boat, by the way.
Just sitting there smoking their cigars, drinking scotch. Oh, the American people are so stupid.
But you know, again, you have these sort of. You have these corporate Democrats that are out to lunch, totally clueless, and they flow wherever the corporate wind takes them. They don't. I mean, these people who've been established, they've been stuck there for so long. These are the people that we have running the show. It's absolutely disgusting.
Well, and look at what Kamala's numbers were when she was running for president. Like she was after Tulsi Gabbard totally destroyed her in a debate, mm-hmm. she wasn't polling at all. And I was just like, there's no way they're going to choose her to be vice president. No way. I mean, if they would have wanted to do it right, they would have picked Tulsi Gabbard. But they picked Kamala, who was and they think that just because she's vice president, that now she's going to be able to go run as president and beat somebody like Trump. No way.
No, not at all. As two recent polls have concluded, 46% of Americans approved of Harris, whereas 47 and 48% of locals disapproved of the new VP. On the other hand, Joe Biden has gained 51% approval, while only 44% disapprove the job he's doing. So if this is your future right now, I mean, is she going to run in 2024? Is she going to run in 2028? She has, like, what does she stand for? She stands for whatever the corporate interests of the party call for. Remember early on, and she was calling for $2,000 a month in stimulus? Whoa, Kamala. Where'd that come from? You're just trying to strike a populist tone all of a sudden, and then the corporatists in the Biden administration tell you back off that. She was a co-sponsor of a bill in the Senate, remember?
Remember her tweets? Come one, come all, everybody, come for the border.
Yeah. No, I can't do that anymore.
Now it's, do not come.
Yeah, do not come. Do not come. It's America. You know, America's a great place. Come on. Oh, no, don't come. Don't come here. So... Corporate Democrats continue to run the show. That's, you know, and you, so Kamala Harris is the future of the party. Democrats are going to get their butts whipped. They're absolutely going to get crushed. If Trump runs and you have another, and it's going to be, I'm telling you, it's going to be run exactly like the Hillary Clinton campaign. I mean, I'm sure Hillary Clinton will probably be her advisor. You know, she will.
Let me tell you how to run a successful campaign. What?
We have no idea what you stand for at all. And you have to support corporate interests of the party. Maybe she'll get advice from Nancy Pelosi. You know, Nancy Pelosi, this is probably her last job as speaker. Maybe she can get on board and really help provide some clear direction for Kamala Harris.
You're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning.
Future of the Democratic Party right there. So you have a home here on our show, guys. We cover the stories you're not going to see in the mainstream media, and we don't support people, these corporate politicians who are all bought and sold, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, I don't care. We'll call them out here on the show. So thank you guys for supporting our show. Thank you for subscribing to our daily newsletter by going to morninginvest.com. We'll have a link in the show description for that. And subscribe to the channel. Make sure you're a subscriber. How many new people do we have here? If you're new, if it's possible, can we flip off of the...
When you said that, I was like, oh, I'm turning it off.
So we're going to turn off members-only chat just for a second. If you're new here, tell us if you're new. Tell us if you're new in the chat.
Somebody's asking, what's the status on the live trading show?
No, Sly Simon. I'm putting that on hold for now. I really want to just focus on this show. I really want to make this show the best I can possibly make it and don't want to be splitting my attention there. But my other channel, I will be covering more finance-based stuff. So if you're interested in that, on the Clayton Morris channel, youtube.com/Clayton Morris, you can come over there where I'll be covering Bitcoin and different investing strategies that I do. That doesn't really have a place here. So I'm really trying to keep this channel focused on what we do here, covering these types of stories that you're not going to see in the mainstream media, and giving voice to those stories. That's my focus here. Progressive News. Let's see, The Real Nizzle is fairly new. Welcome. Big Crash says, I'm new. Love the show. Thank you so much for subscribing. I appreciate that. Helder Sicarios, am I saying that right? I'm new on the show. Great to see you.
Let's see if we got some new members too.
Let's see. Hello from Florida, new to the show. And is that Invencio Gomez? Welcome. Welcome. Betty Boop says, thank you for the focus, Clayton. You're welcome.
So we got Joseph Thornburg, Moises Espinal, Jean Batista. Hey, any related to Angel? William Wells, Kate McCoy, David Morton, Linda Evans, Holly Patch, and Natalie Brandon, and Roel Gurum Duel, new members. So welcome. Are you frozen? Or are you just looking down that intently?
No, I cut to Grover's cam, so I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, I think you froze a little bit.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I can see your signal is yellow down here.
Wow. Wish I would have held on to that Robinhood trade yesterday. Sorry, Chase Cornerstone. We'll see. I mean, I'm trying to see. I'm still going to be doing trades. It's just a matter of, like, I don't want to rush this show to jump over there and do that. So I'm still trading. I might jump on, but it takes a lot out of me. It really takes a lot out of me to do that.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people don't, like, if you guys don't do the YouTube thing or whatever, it's a lot to manage a channel. You guys don't have any idea. Like, you see the show, you see us for like an hour, but the pre-show setup and the post show, like what we do for thumbnails and all that other stuff, like all the work that goes on after the video editing and all that, it's a lot. And when you try to do a couple different channels, because you've got the Paranormal Post as well, when you try to do multiple channels, it's a lot to take care of. So that's why we're trying to focus on this show and make it the best it can be. And then, you know, if Clayton has time to go trade and stuff like that, he'll do that. But
yeah, I don't want to rush the show. I want it to be a great hour-long show. That's my goal with you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 stories that are, you're not going to see the attention on the angle in the mainstream media, and you're not going to get this news anywhere else. Like, I want this show to be the show that I would want to watch every day, because that's my approach. Like, I'm doing the stories on this show that I can't find really any coverage anywhere else in the way that we're able to provide it for you. And I would want this show to be the only show that I would watch to get my news unfiltered, unpaid for by big corporate media. And that's how I'm building this show. And if I stick to that and I really put the focus on that, then, you know, we can really create an amazing community here. We've already got, you know, we've got tens of thousands of people that watch us every day here. And so I love that. You know, what's amazing to me is we have more people watching our show than some channels on cable. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. It is amazing when you think about it. Just a little, two guys from their houses, you from your loft and me from a bedroom.
Exactly. Yeah. And covering these stories, it's amazing how we can, like, you know, we can make a lot of change too and create a movement there.
I mean, take Betty Boop as an example. You know, Betty Boop was more on the conservative side of things and realized that when you really think about it, you know, and that's the thing, like I would put myself as a libertarian, but I've become basically a libertarian socialist. I'm a free speech purist. You know, I believe in free speech and everything, but I also have learned that if you can spend $750 billion a year killing people, you can definitely spend money to help people. And I look at examples like Norway and Denmark, where they have a higher quality of life than us. So it just makes sense to take care of the people, because the way that I looked at it was, when you've got people that are in high medical debt and they can't live their life because they're paying for their medical bills, just because they happen to be somebody that had a cancer gene that I didn't have, why should they have to live their life in debt and I shouldn't, just because I was lucky enough not to get that gene? It's not their fault. some of these diseases people get are not their fault. So having something in place to be there for them makes sense to me. And we can afford to pay for it. And it's not socialism, that's democratic socialism. So if you look at the Norway and stuff like that, or even Portugal where you're at, like, it's mm-hmm. democratic socialism. Explain what it is.
Yeah, I mean, so people all the time are like, well, Clayton, then what are you, a socialist? I say, well,
or communist, they'll say.
Or a communist? It's like, well, no. What you have to understand is I'm a liberal from Philadelphia. That's what I am. And I believe that the government has the power to help people. That's why we have a government. And nobody, when you see how we've been lied to and sent propaganda by our government and the mainstream media, because it's all run by Wall Street and corporate interests and money. Money is the bottom line. And so would you want people that have, would Wall Street want Medicare for all, where they wouldn't have to spend $700 to buy a breath inhaler, you know, or three times the amount of money for prescription drugs than other countries do around the world? Like, are you kidding me? They would never support that. And those are the people that run Washington. I worked and covered politics for so many years. I started out as a political reporter. I worked in the mainstream media for a number of years. I saw how it worked. I saw how Americans are living. You know, the wages are not going up. People are being hurt around the country. And yet corporate interests are driving the narrative. And, we continue to vote for these people. I worked on political campaigns back in the day, and I saw how this worked. And I saw all the money that would foil the problem, come in and just ruin the entire system. And realized that, like, here I was, like, passionately supporting these certain issues. And there was no voice for it. Like, there was no one that was, like, could talk about this. They would pay lip service to it a little bit. And then when they got to Washington, they totally, just went back to their corporate interests and their donors, because it drives all of politics. And when you look at Europe and you see these other countries around the world that actually take care of their people and make sure that there's a social safety net, right? And then in America, we get this propaganda. The American propaganda is that, oh, you want to wind up like Norway, where they have such high taxes over there? Actually, yeah, I do.
Look at all the things we pay for that are kind of hidden taxes that we don't even consider taxes.
Right. Well, we pay taxes. Our money goes to bombing people. Imagine if we actually didn't do that, didn't have a massive standing military that bombed the rest of the world, and actually use that money for good for our people.
You know what I think it is? It's like, I think it's like Monsters, Inc. We've been trying to scare people for so long. We've never tried laughter, because the thing is, Wall Street thinks backwards. Because if you would build a solid, strong middle class with a UBI, with Medicare for all, with those things, and people didn't have to worry about medical debt, they didn't have to worry about debt, they could go out and they could live their lives and be happy, by default, Wall Street would make more money. But they're trying to scare us into this instead of laugh us into it.
Right. And Norway is a market economy. Market economy. So the other day I was having lunch with a friend, and he said, well, how would you describe yourself politically? And I said, I think maybe the best way is to describe me as a libertarian socialist.
That's exactly what I call myself now. My brother's like, you can't be a libertarian socialist. That makes no sense. Like, it does to me.
It does. I mean, think maybe, as my friend said, maybe Ayn Rand might be turning over in a grave somewhere. But it's true. You know, like, I think we should be ending all foreign wars. We shouldn't be propping up Wall Street. I think we should. But we should also be taking care of our citizens. You know, mm-hmm. That should be the role of government. Government should be there to help us, not to hurt us. And now is a time for us to make changes. I'm reading Jared Diamond's book. He's one of my favorite authors. Jared Diamond wrote a book a number of years ago called Guns, Germs, and Steel. It was a book that changed my life. Like, it was, anyway, he's amazing. And his newest book is called Upheaval. And it looks at how, you know, basically how countries destroy themselves. He also wrote another book called Collapse, sort of like the history of how countries collapse. And the United States is following all of the hallmarks of exactly how countries collapse, how powers collapse. The United States is on the path, following in the same footsteps. And don't be surprised, folks. I mean, don't be surprised if it happens sooner rather than later.
And a lot of people put it on the military. They're like, well, we're never going to collapse. We got the strongest military. But that's exactly, if you look at the Roman Empire was the strongest military up until the day they collapsed. And how they collapsed? Financially. They ran mm-hmm. out of money. And that's going to happen to us. If any countries would come together and stop trading oil in the U.S. dollar, if the only thing propping up our dollar is oil, If they stop trading the oil and the dollar, our dollar would crash instantly.
Instantly. Yeah.
And a lot of them don't want to trade in the dollar anymore. I mean, that's a real discussion out there. So, you know, what are we going to do then?
I don't know, folks, but I want to leave you guys with this today. I'll leave you with this. This is a quote that I want this show to be, you know, I talk about, I came up with the tagline a few weeks ago saying, you know, you're ready to get uncomfortable. Let's get uncomfortable, right? And I think that's a good marker for this show. Like, you don't get uncomfortable. Unless you're uncomfortable, you don't grow, right? Mm-hmm. But I'd like to leave you with this idea too on this day, which is something John Lennon said. You know, being honest may not get you a lot of friends, but it'll always get you the right ones. And so I look at that with our show here. If you watch our show, you're the, you know, and you're tuning into this show and you're watching from beginning to end and you're engaged in our show, you're sharing it with your friends. Like I we may not have the audience that a Fox News has, but that's okay because I've got the right people watching. I've got the right friends watching the show. People that can make changes, that can really start being that ripple in a pond, you know, that starts to turn into a wave with these issues and helping other people.
Exactly.
So there you go, John Lennon. Imagine. All right, everyone. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. We will be back here at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow. In the meantime, we'll have other videos throughout the day that you can tune into and share as well. But stay safe, everyone. Be kind to each other.
Free peace. Britney Spears.
Free Britney Spears. That's right. Free Britney.